Okay, we ready to get started again? Looks like it. Good. Okay, let's start off from our break with the Ithaca Downtown Partnership. See Mr. Ferguson there and others come on up. There's Mike there. There's a couple open seats if you want to, and you can present from there as well. In your books, it's on, there's an OTR on page 17, and in your big book, it's actually on page 104, not 99. And Mr. Travis is joining us as well. Hello. All right.
Nathan, why don't you just say a few words?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I should let people know about the format. Forgive me. Basically, this is just an opportunity to update the legislature about the work that you're doing very briefly and to talk about specific budget requests, specifically this OTR 90, which is the... And actually, if you don't have a copy of this, you probably don't have a copy of this, right?
I do.
Oh, you do. Okay. Then just...
But this is a non-voting meeting.
But this is, yes, and I'm sorry, this is a non-voting meeting. This is purely information.
No. Good. Well, thank you. Thank you for letting us come. I did email folks, and we had available down in the office, a handout. I don't know if everyone got it. I know members of GBSQ got it, and hopefully others have got it as well. If not, we can get it around to you. What I might want to do is just summarize a little bit about what's in that handout, and just maybe this will stimulate some discussion. First of all, the Ithaca Downtown Partnership, now called the Downtown Ithaca Alliance.
Only
because of a formality, is what's known as a business improvement district. In essence, it really is a quasi-governmental entity. It collects tax. It collects assessments, and so it actually is a entity that deals and has a stream of that does collect money from property owners in a specific district, and that's important, I think, to the discussion that we'd like to have with you today. It is chartered to try to improve the core center of our community. We just rechartered it as a 501c3. So it is not designed to be a league or a chamber or something that deals with specific businesses. In the eyes of the IRS, in the state, in the federal government, it is something that exists for community betterment. And we purposely went in that direction. BIDs, Business Improvement Districts, exist to provide supplemental services over and above what municipalities or jurisdictions normally provide, and they provide both hard and soft services. They are special districts of sorts. Most special districts that we're aware of are single purpose. I want a library district. I want a lighting district. I want a sidewalk district. I want a sewer district. BIDs allow entities or municipalities, jurisdictions to go beyond that, to actually get involved with soft as well as hard services, marketing, development, the things, the nuts and bolts of actually trying to improve an area. And so you can't do that under special district legislation, so they created a special thing called business improvement districts, and that's what they do. So they provide benefits not only to the community at large, but to the property owners within this specific district. And consequently, the property owners in those districts are taxed. They are taxed additional dollars. Everybody who owns property or has property within the BID district, some 22 blocks of downtown, pays an additional tax. And in our little memo, we outline what that is. The county is one of the district's largest property owners. It may be the largest, we're not sure, but it's one of the largest property owners in the district. It owns 5 properties in the district itself. It owns others that abut it. This building, the buildings in this complex, basically almost butt up to the line of the district. So the county is a major stakeholder, if you will, in the district itself. You have the, you, I think you have more employees than any other downtown employer. You certainly have one of the, you're one of the largest users of office space. If we took those five properties that were in the district and you paid the assessment that everybody else paid, you would be paying this year the equivalent of $32,000 a year. Now, you're not doing that, obviously, but that would be the equivalent to what you would be paying. In the last 10 years, and I went back 10 years, the bid district really got started in 1997, and it really took off really, in, I think, in 1999. So in the last 10 years, property owners have contributed or have paid into the bid $1.9 million in additional property tax to help for the betterment of the downtown, the downtown district, and the community via a strong downtown. The good news is that $1.9 million leveraged well over $100 million in investment. So our argument would be, that's a pretty good return on investment for people, and one that I think we're proud of. The city itself, in that last 10 years, paid in its own volition, about $587,000 to contribute to bid operations. The county actually did, in the last 10 years, the county actually did contribute as well. The county contributed $30,000. All of that in the first 5 years. The county actually was a participant, a financial participant in the life of the bid in the first in 5 years ago, but about 5 years ago when fiscal crunch hit in, that was finally eliminated. And it's been 5 years since you've been a participant. So we respectfully come and suggested that given the important community functions that we try to play in terms of building a stronger downtown core for not just the, just the property owners of downtown, but for the community at large, we think it's appropriate, we think it's important that the county step up and be a fiscal partner in the life of the Business Improvement District, just like the other property owners all around us, particularly given your stature of being the, either the largest or one of the largest, that that makes sense to have that kind of participation in that kind of role. So, Mac, anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I'm amazed at the amount of $1.9 million from the property owners over 10 years. But if you think about some of the details that the bid takes care of, if your sidewalks, which, you know, certainly the city participates, but we have people out there picking up daily, hourly on the commons in the bid district. The bid district, by the way, I'm sure you're aware, is 22 blocks around the commons. We have people planting the flowers. We have people recruiting new businesses. Gary and the bid board were at the heart of the hotel, and Cornell's choosing to bring 300 people downtown. They were at the heart of the gateway projects that we did. They were at the heart of Cayuga Green. There have been just really running the major development or spurring it on with inspiration. Same with State Theater, the Clinton House, Kitchen Theater. Gary serves on many of these boards. Many of our board members do the same, and it is very important. We live and breathe with our financial support, and for the county to leave us out, I think you're being frankly short-sighted because of the things we do. We developed a strategic plan for the first 10 years of the bid. The parking garage was on it, the hotel was on it, new jobs were on it. New housing, 400 to 500 units of housing. We're 60% of the way on that. And we are now working on a strategic plan for the next 10 years. We'd like to be able to call you a partner. It's something that will benefit this heart of our community, the central core of downtown.
I have a question about this. Now, in the reason for the request and the part about if not funded, it basically there's a long list of what will, you know, that it will restrict the ability to recruit business, market the community to visitors, et cetera, et cetera. But I wanted to know, what would the incremental benefit of the $17,000 be to the Downtown Alliance? The incremental benefit of that $17,000.
We have a work program. We have an annual work program that has about 85 different elements in it. So it's extremely complex and it's extremely broad-based. This time of year, we're beginning the process of trying to determine what our work plan will be for next year. We wrestle with where to put resources and how much to put them. And inevitably, it comes down to a question of, do we spend more time on business recruitment or less time on business recruitment? Do we hire a consultant to help us with that or a contractor to assist, or do we not have the money to do that? $17,000, for example, would hire our development consultant. We were only able to hire one for 5 months of the year this year, for example. We didn't have that much money, so $17,000 would, in fact, give us a development consultant that would help us with recruitment, which is a great case in point. You look at the vacancies that have cropped up in downtown. It's a direct it's not just a direct reflection of our work. The economy's been tough, and what you see is something that is a result of that. But we did not pinpoint one thing for you to say, well, if you don't do this, well, you're not going to get this. No, I mean we juggle just like you do and try to figure out what's the best way to take whatever resources we have and spread them the best possible way. So, but I mean, business recruitment is a great example of one that we've only partially funded this year that we would love to fund more of if we could.
Thank you. I have Carol and then Dooley and then Martha.
We really appreciate the, you know, the efforts of the, I've been involved in the downtown partnership and building the BID from back when you were first talking about it, and I think it's been really good for our community, and it's been a nice partnership to have them step up and say we need to play a part. I also know that we provide some support, both direct and indirect, over the years through the tourism program money, which we, you know, it is county money. So I guess I'd like to understand from your perspective and guidance from you on how we should think about that, both, you know, what do you see as having provided direct support and indirect support, things like I met this morning with the one of the focus groups with the Chamora consultants, you know, that we're putting that money into, and you know, hopefully that's going to benefit, help us figure out how to bring more people into the county and downtown, because that's where a lot of visitors
go. Yeah, the those numbers that I recited don't include special contributions for projects or special projects. We besides what businesses do, we also go to them when we need money for special events, when we need money for activities like hanging baskets, or when we have special programs, we want to put banners up downtown. Those are all additional add-ons that we go to people to ask for additional money for. The STP money, which is discretionary in money, it's usually competitive money that we compete for, is just like anybody else, is set aside for programmatic type things like that. And so, indeed, we don't use it for core operations. We use it for programs and specific things. Most recently, for example, that red kiosk you see out there in the Commons that we use for visitor information came as a result of STP and room tax assistance. But you know, that's a specific program project as opposed to a piece of the core operations of what we do. So that's how I distinguish those.
Can you refresh my memory about the amounts, either this year or in recent years?
Amounts and, yeah, well, it depends. The STP, we tend to have, we often get money for ambassadors, for the ambassador program, and for helping with the part of the beautification side of the operation of the house. The beautification program, we get plus or minus $20,000 in that area. And then other miscellaneous grants, it depends on the occasion. You know, every year we probably get $5,000 or $10,000 from grants for specific projects, whether it be to help with an ice sculpture event in the winter or something like that. So those things are there. We're grateful that they're there. They help us with those particular projects. And that is very good. But we don't count that, just like we don't count monies that we get from Tompkins Trust Company, from M&T Bank, from individuals for other project-related things. If we did that, our budget would be far greater than what that number would be far greater. So what you're seeing is that's just our core operations budget. That's what pays to keep us in operation, in business.
I have Dooley and then Martha.
Thanks. First of all, for our newest legislators, in the OTR booklet, this is described as a new initiative, and I object to calling it that since we used to participate. This is would be a revival or continuation of something we used to do. I read in the handout, which I hadn't gotten until it just came around now, that you probably, well, you're suggesting $17,000 is a reasonable amount to ask us, and I was going to ask why, and now I've read, I think it's based on what you think the library property alone would have been assessed at.
That is correct.
And again, for our newer legislators, I wanted to just share how I view this. Because we occupy significant space downtown, which otherwise might be occupied by taxpaying businesses who would be assessed, it seems only right to me that we contribute because we are depriving the bid of money they would otherwise have from other kinds of occupancy here. So that's a kind of simple-minded way to look at it, but that's how I look at it. And I'll talk more about it when we get to voting meetings.
Martha?
Thank you, Nathan. I'm looking for, and Gary, in this document, I'm looking for the statement about the county's representation on your board, and must be in something else.
I can certainly talk a little bit about that. When we did get county participation, financial participation with the bid, we also at that time changed our bylaws to allow the county to have a voting seat on the bid board. We are, to my understanding, we're the only bid, and there are some 60 or so in upstate New York and some 60 or so in the city of New York as well, just itself. We're the only bid that I know of that has a voting county seat on their board. Now, we did that on purpose because we thought you are a major stakeholder in the life of downtown. And so you do continue, even in the 5 years when you haven't participated financially, we have not changed that, and you continue to have a voting seat on the board of directors of the Downtown Alliance. We have some ex officio voting seats. The chamber has one. All three of the universities, TCC, Cornell, and IC, all have non-voting positions, but we specifically gave you a voting position because of your stature and status.
I have a comment from...
And one other thing. I talked to Gary yesterday and said, one thing I didn't say was that I thought it was brave of you to come and ask this. But I think maybe you were tired of waiting for conditions to get better. I mean, we said, you know, this is a tight budget year. We had to stop funding this, and I think 5 years later we see, well, it doesn't seem to ever get better, so might as well go ahead and ask. So my question to him was, and if you could talk about your response, if the best we could do were something like stepping up to the $70,000 in four chunks, 4 years, you know, add $4,250 each year for the next 4 years, would that be worth anything to you?
Well, I think having the county become a financial participant again, in whatever guise, it has value. It has symbolic value for the other property owners of downtown, who are each year contributing, some of them a great deal. So symbolically, having you being a financial participant means something, because the buildings you own, your next door neighbors are paying, and you are not.
All right, thank you. We'll go on to Will and then David, and then I'm going to end questioning because we need to move on. All right, Will.
Gary, what is a typical yearly budget for the bid?
Our annual budget's about $550,000.
Okay.
Of which a little bit over $300,000 comes from bid assessments.
Okay, thank you.
David?
Yeah, I was just curious, not being familiar with your budget, but the city participation, after the creation of the bid, has the city contribution been the same, constant, or has it fluctuated up and down?
It went up substantially, actually, when I came. Thank goodness, because it helped bring me here. They actually did increase their contribution at that time to help provide additional resources to make that happen, and they have continued that subsequent. So they contribute roughly $60,000 a year now, is where they are at this point in time.
Is that coming from the ILRU or from the city tax base?
No, that's coming. That's part of their annual appropriation from their budget.
Okay, Matt, Gary, thanks a lot.
Good.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for the time.
Thank you. All right, let's move on to SPCA. Abigail, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, fine. Oh, and also the county administrator would like to brief us about an issue about the budget at the end at around 7. So if anybody wants to hear that, stick around. And of course, all the legislators will be around.
You make us leave.
No, we had a department head meeting this morning, and I'm going to relate what happened there.
Yeah. All right. Abigail. I'm sorry. So we are on page 23 in the OTR and 112 in the big book. I love that, the big book.
I wish I had that
sounds
book.
Authoritative.
Okay, then. So I did distribute a document this morning. I don't know if any of you have had a chance to read through it. So what I'd like to do is just take a couple minutes to talk about some highlights and sort of explain our program and how I see the county sort of fitting into that. The proposal that the SPCA submitted this year described a comprehensive cat control program. We talked about rescuing and sheltering and providing medical care and adopting out cats. It's a pretty big undertaking. But I want to clarify for you that the SPCA is not requesting the county support for that entire program of sheltering and adopting out cats. Specifically, what the SPCA is requesting support for is to undertake an aggressive and comprehensive TNR program for free-roaming cats. And I'll explain what that is. As you may or may not know, our county, like every county in the country, really, is facing a cat overpopulation problem of cats that are called, these days, are called free-roaming. They include stray cats that ran really far away from home and are never going back. And feral cats, which really just means that they are basically wild cats or cats that are unsocial to humans. They'll run. When you approach them, they will run away. The problem is that nobody owns these cats, and so they don't get spayed and neutered, they don't get vaccinated, but what they do is breed and breed and breed like rabbits, except they're cats. So what's happening is the population just continues to multiply, and it really is just a runaway express. If if we don't address this growing overpopulation problem, it will just get worse. And our concern is that that will increase the spread of rabies potentially. It will become an even bigger nuisance to people who sometimes are irritated by free roaming cats in their neighborhoods. And it will elevate the risk to wildlife, which I know concerns lots of folks around here. And I can tell you that experience has taught us that simply removing the cats from neighborhoods, trapping them, taking them away, and then, say, killing them is not a good option. One, as you may or you have read somewhere, we don't do that anymore. So that's not an option for the SPCA. But more importantly, it doesn't work. When you take the cats out of their colonies, and these colonies are created in an environment that offers two things for these cats. One is a food source, and the other is some sort of shelter. So they colonize there, and they maintain their numbers. If you take the cats out of the colony, new cats move in. And when the new cats move in, they start to breed, and they just continue the cycle. So what I know our community really needs is prevention efforts at this point. And TNR, trap, neuter, and return, is the best solution there is right now. When you spay and neuter the cats, you take them, you give them surgery and vaccinate them. When you spay and neuter them, it eliminates annoying behaviors that really get to probably all of us. The male cats that are unneutered go around marking all their territory, and then your yard stinks. Female cats get in heat, and they start howling, and they keep you up all night. When you spay and neuter these animals, that mating behavior ceases, which makes for a peaceful community. While we bring the cats in to spay and neuter them, we also vaccinate them against the spread of rabies. One thing I did write in my memo that I'll just mention here is that, of course, New York State has a mandate that all cats must be vaccinated for rabies. However, it does not really specify who might be responsible for that. And when cats have no owners, nobody's responsible for rabies vaccinations or the cats at all, in most cases. Finally, as we start to be able to stop the breeding of these cats, their numbers will stabilize at first and then continue to decrease. The cats will live out their normal life out on the street, so to speak, and will stop reproducing. And gradually, over time, we'll see those numbers go down until one day, hopefully, you will not be able to identify a nuisance feral cat problem in your area. So really, to conclude, the SPCA is asking for the county to become a partner with us in doing some prevention work for the overpopulation problem that we have. At the same time, it allows us to make the community safer by vaccinating for rabies, which we've probably all heard this year is on the rise.
Pam?
You have been doing this for a while. Right. I mean, I actually just had a personal experience with the SPCA and a wild cat. You know, so I mean, this is not a new program. But
no, it's certainly not a new program or a new concept. What is new about it is that we're actually going to, follow the motto: go big or go home. If you spay and neuter, 150, 400 cats. Somewhere, it doesn't put a dent in it. It's like bailing the ocean out with a thimble. So what we really want to do is get in and get aggressive about it and go area by area by area and be methodical. Really make a difference.
Okay. Any other questions for Abigail? Yeah, Martha?
I've heard many times about, students who come to the community and think it'll be fun to have a cat, and then they leave and also leave the cat. Mm-hmm. I think that's, my sense is that's more common than with dogs. Just, cats seem to be independent, we'll just let them go. Is there any effort? I mean, somewhere in here, I can't find it at the moment. You talked about greater education, focus upon prevention efforts, humane education, and outreach programs will reach youth, adults, and families to prevent cruelty to animals, teach ways to properly care for pets, and educate the public on the merits of spaying and neutering. Is there any effort, any plan to really talk to students about this? Because I really think it's very common.
It is somewhat common, certainly the SPCA is started this year really in force doing humane education programs that do include students from, at every level. I mean, we do story time for little kids, and we go all the way up and talk with university groups. That is really a mission-based program that the SPCA is working on growing. This feral cat population problem is sort of a community problem that nobody owns that we really want to get aggressive about.
Mm-hmm. Will, you have a question?
Is this something that you envision like a one-year big push and then it'll even, or is it going to be an ongoing need?
No, it's one of those things that, you have to start somewhere, but you also have to keep going. This would have to be something that we maintained going forward. It's, cats don't know boundaries. They cross from one county to the other. So, I feel like, we'll make the biggest difference we can in the areas where it's the biggest problem, city, for example. But I don't think you can ever stop. Because people don't alter their cats. They get out, they breed, and they produce kittens that grow up wild and then keeps going. So until every single cat in the county is spayed or neutered, I think we'll continue to see a problem.
Martha?
I found my other question. Your predecessor, one meeting of Health and Human Services a couple years ago, came and talked about the connection between domestic violence, incidents of domestic violence with people and with animals. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was real eye-opener. It was sort of like, oh, of course. And so then there was some conversation about more communication between, say, social services and SPCA. I haven't heard anything about that lately, and it's not related directly to this request, but I'm just curious.
Sure. That's absolutely true. It's proven. Our friends Jeffrey Dahmer and the like start with animals. That's undisputed. Two things are happening. It's, again, starting in 2008, really when I started, had my first full year here, we started focusing on prevention work as a priority for the agency. That's where the humane education programs come in for kids. You can teach kids respect and kindness for animals when they're wee. They learn that can be a learned way of being for kids. And you start there and you just continue it on. We have had actually several meetings with social services, and we've been working quite closely with them, working with caseworkers on specific cases where there are people and with abusive system, to sort of solve a whole comprehensive problem. The other thing that we've been able to do that's been very successful is act as a rescue shelter for victims of domestic violence that need to relocate, and they go into a shelter and we take their animals free of charge until they can relocate. Because the relationship between a human and their animal is really significant, especially when you're going through a time like that. So we help that be able to keep their animals. And but yes, that partnership with social services has been very good.
Okay, and then when they would get resettled, then they can get their animals back.
Right. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Carol?
As with the others, I'm trying to understand this request in the context of what your budget had been before and what we did in the past. And I see, if you look at it one way, it seems to be a 50% increase, but on the other hand, you're saying that it's also showing up that you had actually gotten $48,000 last year, so I'm not trying to understand.
Yeah, I just requested this year the same amount that the county did fund us in total, for next year, this year. So what that does is buy us about 950 surgeries. We have the capacity to do 1,800 surgeries, so if I can get the cats in and out, we'll do whatever we can to raise the money to keep the program full. But I took the level that I had in 2008 and requested it for 2009 for this program specifically.
How did the 2008 amount go from 33 to 48?
There was 33 that was granted, and then 15 put in contingency, which is just released.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Other questions for Abigail? All right, seeing none, thank you very much. All right, let's move on to emergency response. Did I see leave A? There you are. All right, come on up. You can stand at the mic or you can come up and sit down too.
Pages?
What's that? Oh, I'm sorry, pages. It is on page 61 of the OTR book, and on the big book, it's 286.
You want a description? And
yeah, just a description, and then we can go through the one OTR. Yeah, you just want to do it all at once. Yeah.
Okay. I think as we outlined last year, this is a budget that's in transition and continues to be with the completion of the communications project and the implementation of the operational expenses that will be ongoing. We have, over the last few years, operated with two programs in the department, 3410, which is a coordination, and 4189, which is a public health emergency medical services account. Last budget year, we created a third program area, 3411, which is for emergency communications, maintenance, and equipment account. The purpose in doing that was to establish an ongoing expenditure and revenue program that would support the maintenance on the new communication systems. And there were a couple of factors there. We were looking ahead to 2-3 years down the road as the maintenance contracts went into effect. And also we're anticipating a various several lines of revenues. These three accounts together approximated or equaled the target for the department. With this year's budget, what we have done is moved a number of service contracts, maintenance items, over into the 3411 so that it actually reflects the true cost of expenses of running the communications systems. We've left the program lines for support of emergency management, fire, and emergency medical services in their respective areas, as well as the salaries and fringe benefits. Well, the fringes are reflected elsewhere, but you know, the salaries that pay for the operations, still with the intention of having them all equal the target. We've also shifted a number of the revenues over to the 3411 to reflect the reimbursements that we get from the state of New York for wireless 911 operations, as well as surcharges that we receive off the landline telephones. And we do that in an effort to justify the use of those funds within the parameters of county law. There are certain eligible expenses that you can use the surcharge monies for, most of which, or almost all of which, are in the 3411 communications maintenance and equipment account. Now, one of the things that we did last year was to anticipate revenue from the statewide wireless network, and we were also speculating on the potential for co-location fees at the communication sites. As you remember, those facilities were built with additional capacity so that if there were others that wished to co-locate on them wireless services, we would have space available to rent. And over the past few months, we have had some limited negotiations with those firms, but we have not aggressively pursued that until we have final acceptance on the system. Steve has outlined for you some of the difficulties that we've encountered in anticipating the statewide wireless revenues, and we've factored that into this budget request in that we are not anticipating any monies from the statewide wireless in 2009. They're in a series of negotiations with their vendor for the system, and they've indicated to us that it is unlikely, highly unlikely, that they would sign any agreement with us in the next few months. So we haven't banked any revenues from SWIN in the next fiscal year. What we have coming due, which drives the over-target request, is the first 6 months' worth of maintenance after 1 year's acceptance time with the new system. And we've estimated a price for the maintenance and servicing and licensing fees on the 800 megahertz trunk system, as well as the facilities that are associated with it and the new paging system, at $331,000. That's half of what we anticipate the full maintenance and servicing cost will be in future years. We were provided a range of maintenance costs from Motorola when we negotiated the contract that ranged from $400,000 to $800,000. And also, at the time we negotiated, if we were to purchase all of the services that could comprise a servicing and maintenance package, somewhere in the area of $600,000 would be that price for the full package rather than selecting individually priced ones. It reflected a very large incentive. And for purposes of budgeting, we have put that number into this budget and have put in for 6 months next year, anticipating those service contracts to start on July 1st. That means in 2010's budget request, you're going to see an expenditure over target request potentially for the same amount to bring it to the total. Now, I don't want to panic you. What we have done by moving certain maintenance items over to 3411 and combining things like electricity, telephone expenditures, maintenance lines, and service contracts, we've begun to trim those with an eye toward retiring the old systems, and that's helped us be able to reduce some of this over-target request for the year. We've also anticipated, starting last year, additional reimbursement monies coming in from the statewide wireless, or excuse me, the statewide 911 wireless surcharge account. I'm going to let Steve talk a little bit more about it. I think he's prepared for this one because it's kind of one of the larger items you're going to see over target-wise. But one of the things I want to go back to is the theme of transition. What you're seeing are worst-case numbers through this over-target request, and we've very conservatively estimated the revenues that are going to accompany it because of the uncertainty with some of the negotiations that we're having. I'm confident that over the next year, 1 to 2 years, that there are a number of partnerships that are going to occur, that there are co-location tenants that are going to come along, that we're going to have some further reduction in maintenance costs as we retire the old system, and we may be able to develop, and we are actively working on developing some partnerships to share in the use of the capacity of the new radio system. And those potentials include additional work with statewide wireless. I don't think the project's dead yet. I think it's going to take on some different life or some different form. I think it's a strong potential that the state is probably, if they don't sign with MACOM, if they do reject the system they've been working on, which is a strong possibility, I think they're going to have to look toward a regional build-out. And in that case, we're very strongly positioned to be able to give them a foothold or a footprint in central New York and build from that. So I'm not at all pessimistic that we won't ever see money from SWN. I think we will. I think they're going to actually be looking to the advantages we have from a new system. Additionally, we're talking to organizations like Cornell and Ithaca College and TCAT and some of the other larger facilities in the area that have radio systems that have indicated an interest in wanting to be more involved with what we have. And additionally, I also think that we're going to be able to actually see some productive agreements come from the co-located users. So that is what is, what we've put together as far as, you know, the future movement of the budget. Now, just from an operational standpoint, I'll stress to you that in meeting the target, I think, once again, we've been pretty conservative in our approach. We're not asking for any additional personnel. We still have a zero equipment line. We have reduced maintenance further to reflect items that we're taking out of service. We aren't initiating any new projects or programs. It truly is maintenance of effort, but it is anticipating things that we contracted for in 2004 and 2005. And I think over the next year, most of these things are going to start to come together, and we'll begin to start to look at some other initiatives, but not this year. We're going to maintain what effort we have and finish up what we've started with the communications project.
Lee, do you want to talk just a little bit about the remainder of the capital program, i.e. the mobile data?
Yes. We have signed off on the main portion of the program, the building of the trunk radio system, the construction and civil work at all of the sites. Again, we've kept within the budgeted capital amounts. We've also acquired the equipment for the subscribers. That's almost to a completion. I think we've got one more agency to actually do installations with, and we're kind of on a cutover schedule right now that probably will be pretty well complete, with the exception of one department, by the end of this month. But the one thing that we did reserve when we set up the capital program and the bonding was being structured was $1 million that was set aside in anticipation of a final piece that would come after the voice radio system being up and running, and that was of a mobile data system, an electronic data system that would allow us to put computers and other electronic messaging back into the emergency vehicles in the county. And we are pursuing the options, starting to look at what alternatives are out there that can be supported now by the new microwave radio system and the infrastructure. And I would expect that that's a program we'd be taking to public safety in the next few months. And that in itself is another area where we may be looking to some partnerships.
Frank.
Lee, can you say something about the reimbursement per phone line, the 35 cent, how that has grown, and whether or not we continue to receive, if we are, it on cell phones as well?
Thanks for asking, Frank. That was a point I missed, and it's a very good point.
I noticed that. I picked right up on what you were missing. So
there is a caution in that line, too, unfortunately. 3411 account, we have 911 surcharge, and it's account number 41140. We've budgeted $295,000 for 2009, which actually I've bumped it up $10,000 from the $285,000 in 2008. That reflects both landline telephones and wireless. And we had actually added, I think, we were at $160,000 for landline phones traditionally right along. We added $125,000 anticipation probably 5 years ago for wireless phones. Those numbers aren't quite accurate, but the sum total of both landline and wireless together is averaging in that $285,000 to $295,000 range. What we have seen is a drop in the landline phones. I don't have a good number for you. My off the top of my head guess is probably 20 to 30%. There's that many less landline phones in the county, but it has been offset by the huge use and increase in the number of wireless devices that people are using. And we also, in the last 2 years, have begun to collect monies from the voice over internet services, in particular from Time Warner's service. And Time Warner agreed with the Public Service Commission to pay the traditional 35 cent landline charge because they are using fixed wires and co-opt some of the landline facilities that are out there. We don't see all of the voice over internets, the Vonages and so on. Some pay, some don't. That's more a federal and a state issue, but there is a potential as people move to newer technologies that aren't taxed, we may lose some revenue. We continue to see landline phones going down, so at some point we're going to hit a plateau unless the state agrees to raise the surcharges. Just an interesting footnote on that subject. We've had eligibility for about $50,000 to $55,000 in reimbursements through the state wireless 911 account for the past several years, and that number has remained about the same. We had thought at one point if a couple more counties became eligible to collect those funds by the upgrades to their facilities, that number would drop. It stayed the same out of a $10 million pool. There's a move every year by NYSAC and other organizations to increase that reimbursement. It has not occurred yet. Similarly, a few years ago, we had asked the state legislature to look to raising our landline charge or the wireless charge as pertains to Tompkins County in order to create maybe a pool of funds to better support the system. The legislature's declined that. Onondaga County had a bill before the legislature this past spring, to raise their landline surcharge from 35 cents to a dollar. They had very good indications that as a home rule bill that it was going to make its way through the legislature. It actually did. It passed both houses. They were counting on that money to help fund the upgrade of their radio communication system, and the governor vetoed it and said that once he allowed one county to raise their surcharge, that's going to open the door to all the others. We're still hopeful at some point that there will be a better apportioning of the monies. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It wasn't to me a good rationale because the 35 cents nowhere near compensates the counties for what the true costs of their systems are.
How is the reimbursement driven by the area code? How does the state determine what you get back? Because we have so many cell phones that are physically in this county but belong to transients, a student or someone who's traveling through with a different area code. I don't think we get reimbursed. Do we get reimbursed for I can't imagine that we do.
My understanding is based on the billing addresses, and they route it to the county where the bills go. And again, that's an interesting point because you have some corporations that have large numbers of wireless devices that have out-of-state billing addresses you may not be recouping the money on. And you have a lot of population here in the county that has them either billed to their homes where they come from or, you know, they're not considered residents here. But on the other hand, the same thing works in reverse. There are a lot of billing addresses in Tompkins County for entities and people that probably actually live in other counties. So it may be a wash in the long run.
Thank you.
I have a question for Carol and then Martha.
Yeah, like my kids. I just wanted you to repeat the percentage drop in the cellular fees and the rise in the cellular fees and drop in the landline fees?
I would estimate 20 to 30% shifted from landline over to wireless devices. And I haven't studied those numbers lately. I've looked at the bottom line number of all the surcharges.
But we're tracking it because we get a 35 cent.
Correct. 35 for landline, 30 cents for wireless per month.
We should note that as we listen to results of polling. anybody under 35 who still has a landline?
And well, we see the same thing in the not to carry it out too much further, but it also reflects in the actual operations of the department because there are fewer and fewer calls coming to us from the fixed landlines where we have good, accurate addresses to people that are using the wireless devices for everything, including emergency calls. And the technology to locate those callers is very imprecise. So even it's not only a financial issue with the movement to wireless devices, it's operational. It adds really to the stress of the dispatch operations.
I had Martha next.
If you were to show co-location fees, where would that go? You have none in here yet, right?
Well, some are, actually. In 3411, we haven't created it. I should be showing a rental line. Right now it's under 44389. I'm glad you pointed that out. We can make that correction. We're actually showing that $86,000 from the 2008 budget.
Well, wait.
Do you see that number?
No. What? Do you know what page?
Page 288.
289. All right. What was the account number?
3411 is the program.
Right.
Line number 44389, other public safety aid.
Okay.
There's a number there, 86,000, which reflects 2008.
Right.
That reflected the $50,000 in reimbursement, and then we put $36,000 in for 2008, which reflects the monies that we're receiving currently off co-locations at the public safety tower. We have two co-locators that have been there for some time, and those had been, I believe, going into a capital account prior to making them part of the program account in 2008. In the over target, I factored in anticipated revenue of $52,800 for 2009, which would be rent at two of the sites that we're in negotiations on. So I'm actually showing, I'm actually going to reflect in 2009 $88,800 for co-location.
Do you expect that in a full year that we would see twice that, or is that less than half?
Optimistically, you could see that over time. Two sites where we're thinking that we will have some contracts on are in the greater Ithaca area, and it doesn't reflect anything out in the more rural stretches, some of the newer sites, because we haven't had the interest expressed outside of the really populated area. And I think that's less an issue of where our locations are than it is of the capital that these companies have to work with right now. I think the stock market issues and everything else, there aren't a lot of big build-outs going on in the industry.
Because
but at the same time, the devices are still being sold, and there's new technologies coming out. So I think there, over time, the companies are going to want to invest in additional sites and build their coverage areas.
Okay, because I know, you know, there are huge chunks of my district, including my house, where there's no cell coverage. And I think customers would welcome it. I would like to see some aggressive attention paid to this. I seem to remember when we were talking about designing the system years ago, there was a general thought that the rentals could pay for maintenance.
Yeah, that's what we've asked Lee to work on, is build these partnerships up. It's going to take a little while. The co-location fees that you're referring to, a paper I think I wrote 5 years ago, something like that, for the design of the overall concept of how we could maintain this. And I would think that a reasonable number is somewhere in the $250,000 range you're going to see from co-location. Then there are the other partnerships that Lee's working on developing right now. We have a meeting later on this month with one that I believe will be fruitful. The overall goal that we gave Lee was build the partnership up, use this highway in the sky to develop enough money so that the system is perpetually maintained, that the county taxpayers will never have to reinvest in this again. And that's what he's working on. But it'll take a little while. It'll take a few years to transition into it. But I'm very confident it's going to happen. I mean, this is a fantastic asset, and it will bring in quite a bit of money. It's just unfortunate that we got this very bad news from Swen at the very last second, but that will come back.
Okay. All right, thank you, Lee.
That's it?
unless anybody has any other
round
questions.
One.
Norma?
Lee took about $40,000 out of his program budget. I just want you to be aware to accommodate what we needed to do in the budget. So if he runs a little short or runs into trouble in mid-year, you may be aware that he thinks he can make it, but he did make a sacrifice in his program budget to make this work.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
However, I see that the number of dispatchers went up.
It didn't. It is. That was action that we took at a recent meeting where we combined four vacant part-time positions.
That's right. Okay.
Yep.
And the overtime also.
Yeah, right. So they now reflect in the full-time pay line.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Great. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you.
All right. Personnel Department. Anita, how are you? Good. Yes, Norma?
There's a replacement packet for the human resource section in that blue folder. I just want to make sure everybody knows it's there. I sent it to you via email earlier today, and that's the hard copy. That's the replacement.
Can you outline what the differences are?
I'd be happy to outline what the differences are.
All right. Anita, you can sit down, too, if you want. Yeah.
Thank you.
Martha wanted me to just tell you the change that happened when there's a few accounts that weren't used in the 2009 budget and the system made them inactive. And by making them inactive, it changed the numbers for 2007 and 2008 modified. So it doesn't change the current budget numbers, but it did change previous expenditures, and that's why it's important to have it correct.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Anita.
Is there a replacement yellow page, too?
No, but it has the OTRs. The OTRs are on the last two pages. Maintenance of effort and course supervisory training curriculum. Okay. All right. Yeah, go ahead, Anita.
Good evening. We have provided through administration a few additional pieces of information in the last few days that I hope the individual members have received. One was a program cost increase sheet from 2005 through 2007, and also the supervisory core training proposal for 2009-2010.
No, because I didn't receive it either, so they don't have it. I'm sorry.
There are two OTRs for personnel. The first one is $12,000 for core computer and work-life skills training. And that's on page 240. We have had increased costs in our core services, including exam fees, postage, printing, office supplies, and medical exams for certain mandated titles. In order to absorb those increased costs in the core programming, the OTR is for training that was previously in part of the personnel budget for $12,000. The second OTR, page 241, is for the proposed core supervisory training, and that's $35,000. The outline of many of the courses are listed on that page.
Okay.
That's all I have, unless people have questions.
Any questions for Anita or Jackie?
Will we be getting whatever you thought we had gotten?
Yes, I apologize. You'll have it tonight.
Thanks.
Any questions or comments? Martha.
Another really big bucks question. Employee recognition at $2,000. You took that out this year?
We took it out again to help balance the core functions and the money that was available in the budget. That $2,000 is generally used towards the 25-year club dinner.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Well, thank you, Anita and Jackie. All right. With that, our last bit until Steve talks to us is human rights. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good.
Good, all right. And that's on your OTR page 30, and in the big book, it starts on page 141. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. With respect to the human rights budget, as you know, in the past few years, I've filled a part-time position as Deputy County Administrator. This year, the upcoming year, I'm fully funding the director's position, and I intend to use, if you approve, rollover to support part of the paralegal aides position. I've also decreased the funding in our professional services line. I've decreased the funding in our service contract, which was directly the copy machine, which we no longer need because we're using the countywide system. So basically, I'm using rollover, and that's it.
Okay. Yes, Julie.
What you're using rollover for is something that you will want to continue in the future, though, isn't it?
That is correct. The way it's currently written up, if there is a merging of the departments, this was one position that I felt that we could eliminate if we decide to go that route. That is why I requested only one-time funding for this year. If that is not the route and the policy decision of this legislative body, I will be requesting that position be fully funded in the upcoming budgetary year.
Martha.
Sean, is that a full-time position?
Yes. And currently, just so you know, currently it's being filled by a Ithaca College student. She just graduated. She'll be going on to graduate school. She'll be filling a position until the end of the year. And then we have another student from Cornell University who will be filling a position from January to June, and he'll be going on to law school.
So undergraduates are in this?
Well, yes, basically. They're going to graduate school. One is already approved for graduate school.
But while they're in the job, they are undergraduates. They're not law students currently.
No. One has already graduated. The other one will be graduating at the end of this year. He's graduating early.
And a fall
student. And he will be going to law school next year.
They're not currently law students while they're in this position.
That's correct.
Okay.
And this position requires a bachelor's degree.
Okay.
Okay. Any questions for Sean? Additionally, Martha?
Yeah, the description seems really to focus on the merger with assigned counsel. Right? That's what's described in here.
That's correct. That's not going to be their primary responsibility, if that's the question.
It's not?
No.
Oh, what is?
They will still be working on cases. They will be conducting investigations.
Yeah, while simultaneously producing long-term positive effects on
their right.
And work during the transition period.
Okay, so that's why you're saying that if the merger isn't the final decision by this board, you'd ask for the permanent funding because that's ongoing casework that you need.
That's correct. It was one of the positions, and I don't want to go into detail here until you've all had a discussion and dialogue on what direction you want to go, but it was the one and only position that I had recommended to Steve if we had an upcoming merger to be eliminated, and currently because it's not being filled by a permanent employee, it would be easy for us to transition that position out.
Okay.
All right, additional questions? Frank, yeah, sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't leave the room for a moment. Can you describe what the timing is on the discussion for merging departments? Or can someone do that? It sounds as if some people have already made this decision, and I'm a long way from that.
No, this I submitted a paper to the Public Safety Committee a few weeks ago, just outlining what the proposal was to make sure that everybody had a heads up that this was in the budget, because it would be very, very easy to miss, especially if we hadn't pointed it out. It's a topic that you really need to take up as part of the budget process. And this is just, we're doing the intros at this point just to say this is an issue that you are going to need to address. The way the budget is constructed, it's proposed in the budget. Now, if you decide you want to go in a different direction, then we have to make some moves to change that. In addition to the potential merger, there is also the request to have the assigned council program reviewed. Those are two distinct ideas that could be separated. But I just want to make sure that it was very clear which direction we were proposing that the legislature consider so that it wasn't missed.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Frank. I'll speak after.
So on the first one, the review on the cover sheet that, or the backup data that you gave us the other evening, is that being pursued through public safety at this point?
We brought it to public safety's attention, and we said, watch out for this in the budget. This is, you know, I've got it in the budget, so if you don't want it to happen, then you have to be aware you have to do something. Okay?
So who would it be up to pull it out of the budget? Public safety?
No. Any one of you can do it during the budget process. I mean, there are a couple of things that have to happen to make that happen if the legislature decides that they are not willing to consider that possibility.
Is the only thing that exists at this point the write-up that you were able to provide and the minutes of the public safety committee meeting?
Right. There are quite a few articles in the paper now, too, if you want to Google them.
I have a comment, and then I will go to Carol, and then Martha, and then Will. With this proposal, the Public Safety Committee is not going to have any sort of resolution on it. We're just going to kind of, if we want to not go forth, the procedure is to just remove it from the budget.
That's the easiest way. I mean, you could also take it up in the budget, in the public safety and decide that that's the direction you want to go. Either way, it's fine.
Yeah, because I think that just for clarity's sake and for public comment, so that might be an approach that might be a little bit more clear for people.
Okay.
I'm sorry. So Carol, and then Martha, and then Will.
Yeah. Without commenting on the merits of the proposal, which most of us, you know, haven't had a chance to do any thinking about at all, what happens to the rollover funds if we did take it out of the budget? Would the rollover funds still be available to the department as rollover should we decide in the future to go ahead with this?
Well, the rollover funds are supporting positions at this point, so that wouldn't change. The issue really would be is moving forward, you would have a position out there that should be fully funded. And is not. It's funded with rollover.
Okay. Right, because remember, this paralegal position is not just working on that. It's also working on caseload for the Human Rights Commission. So, and Sean, did you want to directly respond to that?
Yes. I was also just looking at this as a cost savings for this particular year as well. That's why I was recommending using rollover versus targeted money, because it was a loss in the director's position when it was funded partially by administration. It will no longer be funded by administration.
All right, I have Martha and then Will.
But in the staffing summary of page 141, this represents a 4/10 increase in staffing.
For the director.
What?
For the director.
Well, of the department. So if we decide not to either study the merger in this way or merge it all, whatever it is. It seems to me that an increase in staff from what we've had the last 3 years, I don't understand why that'd be warranted. In other words, the numbers here say that the full staff of the department in 06, 07, and 08 are 3.5, 3.6, and 3.6 people. When you go back to full-time at the department, it seems something else could be given back.
I'm glad you made that comment, because we've always been staffed with two paralegals. I was concerned that comment would be made once I shifted back as director, and we did have this discussion before. It is a necessary position. I've always filled it either with a permanent employee, or I've been able to have students fill the position temporarily when need be. We've always had four staff members, and although I was 60%, I did spend an enormous amount of time despite that factor. So I don't think the shift in my workload is going to decrease.
Well, in 06, it shows one of the paralegal as half-time. And then 07 was when you shifted, and that person became full-time. I remember doing that.
That's correct, because that was a decision that was made that particular year to reduce the funding when we had cutbacks.
All right, well, maybe we need to see what was beyond previous to 06.
Right.
Okay.
Well,
earlier today, Greg and I were at a meeting of the advisory board at Indigent Representation. This topic of the merger came up, and people may be surprised to learn that there was not wild enthusiasm for the proposal. They decided to set up a committee of the whole to study the question. Their understanding is, according to their charter, that is their duty to do that. And they are going to, I think, hopefully study the potential for cost savings within their whole system and the pros and cons of different models. Greg, please add to this if you had a different understanding.
No, you're doing fine.
Thanks.
As a point of information, Nate, the agenda for the next Public Safety Committee meeting will be set tomorrow when Michelle and Paula and I sit down. But I can say with some significant degree of surety that this subject will be discussed a week from Friday at the next Public Safety meeting.
Okay. All right.
Just a quick one for Greg. Will you invite any of the ABIR members to your committee meeting to hear the discussion?
They're always invited. And the August meeting, when we discussed this, some of the ABIR members and the supervising attorney of the assigned counsel, everyone was recognized who had something to contribute and was allowed to speak when we talked about the subject.
Great minutes, by the way.
I can't take credit for that.
Okay. Carol.
Yeah, can I just clarify? This may be just a newcomer's needing to understand the process, but isn't there some process by which we can, the department can keep its available funding without having to commit to whether we will or won't do a program that we haven't discussed yet? I mean, it's my understanding that departments get to keep their rollover. If you can, you put it into contingency or have some other way that's out there.
No, they have to say what they want to spend.
They have to say. Okay.
Well, the three avenues, really. I mean, when a department says that they want to do something and they want to use rollover, the legislature can grant their request and use the rollover. They can deny the request and take the rollover. They can deny the request and give the rollover back to the department. There are three different possibilities.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Martha.
Sorry, but I just to try to understand this. So right now, if I look at the bottom, page 142, is all the salary for the paralegal rollover? Whatever this person would work on, let's say the person worked on cases, then there's nothing about merging with assigned counsel. Is that position still funded by rollover, no matter what they're working on?
For the upcoming year, we're requesting that it be funded by rollover because we were trying to save money by not putting in a target for this particular year.
Okay, wait. So,
because I mean, if this merger did not exist, Martha, I would have simply requested target for this particular position or target for the balance of the funding in the director's position. That's it.
Okay.
But because we had rollover, I was trying to save some funding for next year.
Okay. The position, the full position is 36,558. The rollover is 13,025, right?
Right. And that would keep us, because I was trying to meet within a target, and we were a little bit over, so I requested the rollover.
Okay. So the
target. Right. I was trying to stick to the target, okay, and I didn't have enough.
Frank.
I'm sorry, Nathan. At our last expanded budget committee meeting, I asked the question about the use of rollover and when it could be used to fund positions. And Steve mentioned that generally it's not used to fund positions. However, there are occasional exceptions for good reason. Is this one that qualifies for that?
And, this is a potential transition in the department, so that's it's an intelligent way to use rollover.
But that decision hasn't been made yet.
Correct. And you may decide to go in a different direction, and then it will be funded differently. So.
But, Sean, did you say if it didn't go in to do the paralegal aid, it would go to the director's position?
The option that I would have looked at to refund the director's position, which we have a loss in funding, I would have either recommended targeted into that particular position to fill the gap, or I would have to look at another position. And currently, because I have that position being filled by a project assistant, I thought that was the most doable position at this point in time.
Okay. Thanks.
Just going back on the merger issue. Now, Greg, so you said there's a good chance it will be on the public safety agenda, but is it going to be in the form of further discussion, or will there actually be a resolution in which people will be able to vote heads up or heads down? Thumbs up.
I don't know if there'll be a resolution. There'll certainly be discussion about both components of this proposal. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty much all I know at the moment. But as I said, we'll meet to set the agenda tomorrow, so may know more about that next time we meet. But
all right. Okay, thanks. Julie?
I'm back on page 142. Or the OTR page, it doesn't matter. You had requested for the paralegal aid position money in addition to the rollover usage, which the county administrator does not recommend.
No, I only originally requested a rollover. That's it.
Do we look
at... Am I misreading this page somehow?
Go up.
Sorry.
No, I was going to say... Look at page 141 and look at account 51000619 and follow that line all the way across. You'll see the 23533. Then go down to the bottom of the 142. It's accounted for. Legislative OTR on that line. It is only one paralegal aid that Sean is requesting money for, as I read this.
No, but I see what Julie's saying. She's saying
I'm looking at the department request on page 142.
Yeah. So it was requested at 36,558. 23,533 of rollover was being offered.
To support it.
It was recommended by the county administrator at the same amount as the rollover.
But what I understand the department was asking for more.
Correct.
And a possible middle ground while this position is... while a possible transition is being discussed as to more fully fund this.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. I see it. Sorry.
All right. Any further discussion on this? All right. Okay, good. All right. And so thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
And now, Steve, you wanted to go over what was discussed at the department meeting today?
Yeah. Remember the last time we met, Monday night, I believe it was, we had a brief discussion about how to handle the reductions from the state that we were being challenged with. And I relate to you that the 2% that we initially found out about, that the departments had absorbed that or we had negotiated it, and that was included in this proposed 2009 budget. Subsequent to those exchanges, we've or the state statements, we have received additional communications that there would be further reductions, and this is what I've been warning you about for a long time. It's the first round is an additional 6%, and it affects very specific accounts, mostly grant accounts. Each department is looking for definition, and each department is getting varying degrees of definition. At this point, we have one or two departments who have things pretty well defined. The larger departments have virtually no idea. There'll be more information coming. On top of that, there is another call to the budget officers for each department and agency of the state that they submit a flat 2009 budget. That is the one you have to be worried about. Okay? If the state is saying that they are looking at flat budgets for 2009, that might mean, you know, that's $3 or $4 or $5 billion, and maybe that's how they're trying to break even, but it's not really well understood at this point. If the departments at the state level are required to submit flat budgets, it's quite often that the departments then start cutting state aid, even though that's not the intent by the legislature or by the governor, but that's what happens. So that's what gets scary for all of us. So we had a long discussion about that this morning, and what I've been saying to you and I said to them was, you know, until we have a better definition, there's no sense in trying to get the entire organization all upset. And, you know, because we just don't know. We don't know what the impact's going to be. And we're better off putting extra money in, you know, holding on to the extra reserves and taking that tact until it's better defined, and then take an intelligent approach to figure out how to handle it. That's what I said to you the other night. The department's accepted that. I think they are supportive of that approach. The question that came back to me was, well, you've told a lot of us that we should continue with our existing programs in 08 as they are funded. And I said, yeah, I think that's appropriate. It's not that big a large an amount of money in 08. It was probably a couple hundred thousand dollars at that, somewhere in that range. It would hit programs disproportionately. It would hit very specific areas. So my advice to the departments was, no, let's just keep on going with the existing programs. We'll handle the overspending if it occurs at the end of the year. Well, they said, well, that's really fine and good, but you're gone. So who's going to stand behind you when you're not here? So what they're looking for is some reassurance from the legislature, and something you should think about and take up. But they're really looking for the legislature to say, yes, that is the approach that we want you to take. Because it is really just my advice to the departments at this point, and you may disagree. Okay? It just means that if you decide that, no, you want to see program reductions, whatever the state program reductions are, you want them reflected in 08, if they're known, the departments can do that, but they have to start sending out notices now, and they have to start reducing programs now. Okay, so they need a response fairly quickly. I would advise you that I just don't think it's that large an issue at this point to, you know, you're going to have a huge challenge in front of you if the state cuts come and they're as large as they potentially could be. You don't need to go through this process multiple times. You know, wait until everything's well-defined and then take it on. But, you know, don't go into programs right now. Get people upset, take it on again and again and again. Take every step as you know it. A couple hundred thousand dollars in our $175 million budget is not a significant number. It is significant for those departments or a few departments that are losing some pretty large amounts of money. But there are large amounts of money to those departments, not to our, in relationship to our entire budget.
Frank Minduli, and then I have a comment.
Steve, I hate to be too negative, but forewarned is forearmed. Even though we don't want to send the departments on a an escapade to start cutting things, what would there be any harm in the message you just gave us, saying we don't know yet, but if you had to, give it some thought, so that in October we're not free.
Yeah. You know, well, the departments are telling the agencies and contractors that, you know, anyone that they have contracts with, just saying, right now we are absorbing this reduction because it's, you know, we're just going to be doing that. But be aware that there will be reductions. You know, we will have to face those, but they're not defined at this point, and so we're not moving ahead with any at this point. Okay, that's where we are right now. If you want to change that, that's fine.
But they're thinking about it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Everybody's very, very aware. I mean, the whole process that we used this year was much more interactive, and the departments did an awful lot of work. I mean, there's a lot of really great work behind the scenes here. Everybody sucked it up and figured out ways to cut. So.
Julie?
Well, as one legislator, I would be prepared to vote in favor of a statement that said it's the sense of the legislature at this point to not try to make all kinds of adjustments weekly as we learn things, but to wait until the end of the year, and that I support Steve's general approach and the message he's given them.
Yeah, I would support that message as well. And the reasons have been given, basically just due to the unpredictable nature of what's happening and the fact that we have to look at this stuff in 2009. Anyway, I think it's best that we just have departments hold to what they've budgeted so far. So I like Dooley's choice of words there. If we could maybe just do a sense of the body of, for and just have, you know, based on the majority of members here current at this meeting. So David.
Well, I just have to interject here.
Yes.
That it does have consequences, because if you're relying on using fund balance from 2008, that won't materialize because of diminishment of our financial position because of state aid cuts. You need to take that in consideration in the 2009 use of fund balance.
Yeah, but I mean that. I mean, with it being, you know, the middle of September already. I mean, is it going to make it? I mean, you said it's probably going to be a couple $100,000.
We estimate that 2% would be around between 200 and 250. Is that right? Okay. And we do that on a very gross basis, and you really have to go through and do all the individual calculations to find out exactly what comes out.
Right. And the budget, as it stands right now, has fund balance like in excess of what we should of the minimum we should have, right?
Yeah. So right now, the proposed budget is about $1.1 million over the target fund balance, right. And that may grow a bit.
Okay, so that's a potential question.
So what message do you want to send based on what Dooley said?
Yes.
What, can you restate it?
Dooley, can you restate your language?
Not really.
Just thought I'd ask.
I hadn't written anything.
It was just
down.
It was so beautiful. And
well, Kathy has it in that case.
Something about... It was something, a sense of the body that...
Something about intent, too.
That we understand that there are changes and that we don't want to deal with them on a weekly basis. The sense of the body is that we will wait till the end of the year to see the impact.
Right. Well, yeah, okay. What's the core issue here? It's basically letting departments know that they don't have to adjust their budgets in 2008.
So if I just send out an email tomorrow saying it's a sense of the body that they should continue on with their 2008 spending as budgeted, and that the legislature will take it up as a formal proposal if they want to do something different.
That sounds good.
Okay. You're saying for the 2008 funding for this year.
Which you've already...
Correct. What you've already... Yeah, it's just this year's funding.
We could go in and change our budget, but that seems drastic at this point.
Yes, Nancy.
I'm sorry. You mentioned the 2% fee, but is it your intent to
have us proceed, even though there are 6% cuts?
For now, because I haven't gotten good definition, I think two departments might have some definition about those additional cuts. It may be that, you know, 30 days from now, we'll have enough information about the 6% cuts in 08 to say, whoa, this is really pretty serious. But I think it's really going to be too late. I mean, I think it's just something we're going to have to suck up. The problem is that at some levels, in each department, an attorney interprets the communications that come from the governor or from the legislature. And each department may have a different interpretation. So when they say 6% of all unspent funds, well, does that mean that if you have a contract where you have committed to a program, is that a spent fund or an unspent fund?
I mean, I think the key thing moving forward is that the legislature just needs to be aware of how even more important having money in the fund balance is, given this this uncertainty. So, Greg, and then and Martha. Yeah.
I certainly wouldn't want to be one who created or contributed to any undue alarm on the part of the department heads or anybody, really. But this is a complicated issue, and I'm not 100% convinced that we shouldn't start to make some reductions. I understand completely what Steve says, but I mean, I also hear what David's saying. So I'm not sure I can enthusiastically raise my hand in the affirmative to whatever Dooley was saying, if we ever figure out what that was.
Well, why don't we add something to that language that basically says, you know, subject to, you know...
I said at this time. I know,
yeah.
I said that.
I mean, yeah, at this time, and, I mean, because you were... I mean, yes, there's the... Because we don't know the nature of those 6% cuts yet, and so, given that, I mean, that would obviously change it, change the discussion. So, but given what we know right now, and that we can talk about right now...
So what... Yeah. I'll ask the departments to continue working on establishing what the 6% cuts mean in 08.
Right.
I will also ask them in their budget presentations if they have that kind of information to provide that to you to see a better sense of it. But we'll try to collect it together and see if we can get a better sense of how big this is.
Right. Okay. So as of right now, this is how we feel. We will continue to monitor the situation. And, of course, this is subject to change given how... given what's the word I'm looking for?
Don't say anything more.
The gravity of,
you know,
of
so
potential cuts. Okay. All right. I'm going to go Martha and then Carol. Yeah.
I would like to not sit back and wait so much. We have a NYSAC conference coming up in about 2 weeks. I don't know whether there must be resolutions that are planned to come through NYSAC. I don't know if we can find out ahead of time what resolutions that would there be a budget committee at NYSAC or state intergovernmental relations or whatever committee that is relevant. Can we find out what NYSAC is planning to pass?
And resolutions directed at who?
They pass resolutions directed at the state.
Right.
Directed at state government. I mean, I would like, especially since we have a meeting coming up next week, we have meetings of this expanded budget committee, we have the opportunity to craft a resolution that tries to explain some of the, you know, why this is a bad idea. Mm-hmm. And before they do something, I really, you know, maybe it's crazy, but I think...
Maybe the difference is the 2% was pretty much across the board. I mean, it was just like, you know, everybody's going to be reduced by 2%. The 6% was very targeted, and it excluded very large programs and a lot of the mandate programs. They tried to target those programs that could be reduced. So the 2%, when I said it's 250,000, that's on the entire amount. The 6% is a smaller subset. I just don't know how big that subset is.
Right. I'm just saying, in the general strategy by the state of so-called balancing its budget on the backs of counties, this is old news, and I'd like to see us take a little bit more of a proactive stance to say, we think this is unacceptable. You know, go ahead and raise income taxes if you have a problem. Don't raise property taxes. What?
Severance tax.
Right.
So separate from this issue, you're saying that the legislature should have a resolution then?
Right. If we're right now talking about a sense of the body, and we're only eight of us?
No, but we're the budget committee. We're not the board. So we have a quorum for the expanded budget committee.
And it's also sort of a different issue. I mean, one,
yeah, I know.
So I don't know that they're mutually exclusive.
Carol and then Frank.
Yeah. I was just going to say, if we're going to do anything, I would be proactive. I think a resolution watered down the extent that it would be to say, we think you don't need to worry yet, but we reserve the right to worry later. If I were a department head, that wouldn't give me much solace. So, and if I were a department head, seeing what's coming, we're worried about it, obviously. And if I had programs, I could.
So why don't we make it specific then? And then why don't we talk about how then that department head should not should stick to 08 as it comes as it relates to that 2% reduction in possible spending, but because of the unknowns of the 6%.
I guess I'm saying I don't think it does any good at this point to pass anything, since we're also saying we're worried. It doesn't. If the point is to give them solace,
just give them.
I'm not sure that it does.
All right.
The point is direction.
Yeah. I got Pam, and then Frank, and then Dooley.
My understanding was that the sort of the sense of the body that we were looking for now was to direct it at our department heads. The other resolution, which we were talking about, the 6% cut that's being sort of lined up for next year, would be a resolution that is directed toward our legislators in Albany and the governor.
Okay, let me just clarify something. The 2% was an across-the-board applied to this year. 6% is a targeted, limited amount applied to this year and carrying forward, both of them carrying forward to the following year. There is a flat budget call for all agencies. That won't. The 2% we have a pretty good definition of right now. The 6% we have some definition of, not complete. The impact of the call for flat budgets for departments and agencies at the state level, you won't have any idea about that until mid next year. Okay, what that
right, but if we passed a resolution on anything past this 2%, it would be directed towards Albany. Yeah.
Well, I think, but I would say hold off a little bit on that for now, because we'll have a better definition of it before you're finished with the budget process. You have to give the state credit and NYSAC credit for all the work that they did do, because it was proposed as a much larger cut, and it was proposed to really impact the counties, and they did back away from that very substantially. So you have to appreciate what they did do. Okay. Well, it's the first time that they haven't just said, let the counties pay.
All right. I have a comment from Frank, and then I'll go to Nancy, and then David. And then and then Frank, Dooley, Nancy, and then David. Sorry.
I think we have sufficiently worried the department heads already. Some of them are sitting here. And I'm sure they're thinking about, well, if this happens, even if it doesn't happen, I better start thinking about it now, which was the message I was trying to send before. Start planning, because you just never know. Plan for the worst. But what about TCAT, TC3? Whatever communicate, were they in attendance? Was somebody in attendance at the meeting this morning?
No, they actually get much more direct communication than we do. So, they get much more direct communication than we do at this point, especially with TC3. But and transportation has not been impacted as much as anything else.
How about Janet Steiner from the library? Was she at the department?
No.
Because she gets some state funds as well.
She probably will have a reduction in state funds.
I think we ought to make sure that whatever communication we're doing among department heads, we ought to let them know as well.
I have Julie and Nancy, and then David, and then I have a comment, and then Martha.
We have our first voting meeting on the budget on October 6th or 5th, somewhere around there. And I think it would be useful to start out that meeting before we get into voting with an update on this matter of what the 6% actually means for certain specific departments, and take it from there. And Martha, I like your idea of writing resolutions. I don't know how much good they do, but I'm in favor of them.
All right. I have Nancy, David, me, and Martha.
Go to the microphone, Nancy. Thank you. I'm sorry to intrude on your discussion, but I just wanted to make the point that from an operational point of view, the longer a decision takes, the cuts that we've been asked to take are based on our whole year's allocation. If you decide in mid-late October that, in fact, you want us to pass those cuts onto the contract agencies that are serving children and youth, they will have November and December to try to figure out how to take 12 months' worth of cut. The state budget cuts were done on a state budget that started April and goes through March of 2009. The funding we are talking about, at least in our department and I think some others, are allocated January of 2008 through December of 2008. So the cuts we're talking about are on virtually the entire allocation at the state level. And if I need to cut the $19,000 that I think is our amount, which we haven't been told officially, and your decision comes mid-October, agencies will have to absorb a full year's worth of cut in 2 months' time. And some of them actually exhaust the funding, the partial funding we give them by the third quarter of 08. So the logistics of it are challenging at best. So and it's not, I'm sorry that it's your issue to deal with. The state has precipitated it, but just from the mechanics side of it, I just wanted you to know that.
David?
I just wanted to make sure my comments are clear. The budget that's in front of you makes an assumption about the fund balance being the same as it is currently. And it also, Steve has recommended that you leave, you don't go below the target and leave, I mean, you leave money on a table of over $1 million in anticipation of the compounding effect of what's going to happen with the state budget that affects 2009. What will happen if you know, the message, if you want to send out, is we're not going to make any adjustments during the current year. More than likely, what will happen is the projected fund balance for the current year, which is assumed to be level with the prior year, will go down, which then flows into, you know, you might have appropriated money that didn't exist in the current, in 2009. So it's a terrible dilemma. And, you know, I don't think there's any easy answer. But the policy issue really is, to what extent, when you're talking, you send this message of holding people harmless, what does that mean? Because there are partners to county agencies that are being cut at the same time the county's being cut. And I think you need to clarify that pretty early in the process.
I'm going to pass on my comments, and I had Martha and then Carol.
It's really fun to follow David. Thank you.
Yes, that's where I didn't want to go.
All right, Steve, when you said 6% is very targeted and something affecting grants, what does that mean?
Well, state parlance, grants is money going to the counties. Okay. State aid, state payments.
Okay, so it's like the health department's 30%, Patricia's 50%, whatever.
There are specific buckets that mean different things. That's why you can't just make a blanket statement.
Okay. If I could ask Kathy Slaughter to come up and describe the direction you were given about the 211 funding, the crystal clear direction from the state about, you know, a program the state started a couple of years ago and now is what they're doing with that. And I mean, I think this is like beyond aggravating, and it's just like no way. It seems just completely no way to run a government. So I
give her a chance to talk.
No. I'm talking. This is the position that we're being put into is just crazy. I mean, the idea that we're being asked to, or we're having to consider preemptive cuts, which may do all sorts of damage, when, you know, the state cuts might not go there, you know, and or they'll go here instead of there. So, you know, anyway, I think the state's suggestion to you, or to you and Ed, was...
Well, I don't think it was the state's suggestion, but the people, if people know that they had cut the funding for 211, which they had put in place, and they put a little money in, and there was some money still in the pot. Some had been not vouched for yet, some had been spent, whatever. So they looked at what had been left in the pot, but it was pretty much anything that was left was getting cut. So the thought was, well, it just keeps getting cut, so we, you know, in order to save it to cover the period that had not been funded, which, you know, would be till the next year's state budget started, it, you know, they were losing it, so it was like, well, spend what you have to now, or, you know, spend that as opposed to something else if you could. It only makes sense because we just keep losing more and more and more the longer we try to stretch out what we have. So you're right. You're kind of caught in a catch-22 because you want to save the money and make it last as long as possible, but if you do, then you lose it.
Right, but then didn't they also kind of say, we don't know, you know, if you have to go into deficit, go ahead. I mean, they sort of said, don't, you know, you don't have, I thought I heard you say that, you know, you were wondering, should we stop the service? Should we, you know, stop providing the service and therefore stop incurring these costs? And they said, no, go ahead.
Well, you know, there's no guarantee that it'll be put back in next year, but there was some confusion about which money that looked like it was left in last year's budget and looked like there was money there. So it wasn't, they didn't put more money in this budget. It actually wasn't there. It just was a vouchering thing, the way it came out for a new program. And so everybody got a little confused, and it didn't get put in.
All right. So. I'm going to use my power as chair to interject in here. What if we had a sense of the body that, and tell me if this makes this totally useless, but just that we'll hold people harmless for the 2% reductions until the end of the year. For those departments that are affected by the 6%, for them to, what, I don't know.
We need to have more information.
We need more information on for those. Because there's departments that are only affected by the 2%, and there's departments that are affected by the 6%. No? Am I wrong?
Everybody's dealt with 2%.
Everybody's dealt with it.
We figured it out.
Okay.
We've taken these costs for best time.
Okay, all right. So the question is about the 6%. All right, that would have been more clear to know from the very beginning.
Given what, I really feel the need to say this, given what we've heard about the 6% and about how it's retroactive to, depending on the department, I think it's different dates, but to possibly January of 2008, is it not just crazy but maybe even illegal? Is there any kind of legal recourse against the state?
No.
For us,
they love to do retroactive
in conjunction with other counties.
They'll go back years.
We are talking about holding harmless. David used the term holding harmless our agencies, and it would seem we should be able to request the same consideration from the state.
The same world.
Bob, you wanted to say something?
And for some legal.
I mean, it's the 2%, which we have dealt with
within our departments and agencies is 6%, which we really, most of us don't know, although we see the strings. And there have been targeted to both. But I just want to say, and this sort of goes to what Martha was saying about the political nature, I think the really big dog here to be concerned about is the flattening of the state budgets in 09. And as Steve said, that's not something we're going to know about until probably April. And that is, and you know, in terms of NYSEC, I was talking to a state one of my state commissioners yesterday. That's the potential thing that we do not want it pushed down into the counties in terms of what that is. I mean, there's elections coming up, you know, and that's a massive cut to state systems and local systems. So, I mean, I think politically, that's something that really needs to get addressed, and NYSEC needs to really get around it. That's not going to get pushed back. That's my 2 cents.
Okay, so I'm continuing to educate myself about this now. This 6% that the governor had proposed, I mean, that was directed at, I mean, obviously we get money from the state agencies, but they're on a calendar that goes from April to April, right? And so when there's a 6% reduction to them, then it affects your funding from April to April then, right?
Not us. Some yes.
For some, but for you, okay.
What we've been told is of the unspent funds till next April.
Right. Uh-huh.
That's where the effective bid will be. But there's a different scenario.
Okay. Yeah, we should be using mics. Sorry.
Yeah.
All right. Well then, I see. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right, so Steve, how do you want to?
No, people are getting more confused the more you're talking, but
yeah.
It depends on which agency at the state level you report to, and
right.
What their attorney interprets it. David's absolutely right. They're talking on a cash basis, and how that's dealt with in each department is different, and each agency is different. So. There's not going to be a common answer. So when you ask the question, what is the impact, and you ask a group, you get a lot of voices and no meaning. So you have to ask the question individually and accumulate the data and then get an intelligent response. Okay, but you're not going to get it in a group environment.
So is this committee going to come out with a sense of anything?
Well, what I'm hearing is, for right now, we're not worrying about the 08 impacts. We're concentrating on the 09. There are lots of different definitions there. But we are looking to the departments to get a better definition of the 6% cuts and that impact on the 08 budget. Okay? I think it's a manageable amount of money, but until I get all the information, I can't swear that. Okay?
All right. Thoughts about that?
Martha. I'm just about NYSEC. Is anybody from the administration going to NYSEC?
Paul and Norma. Well.
Okay.
She's scheduled to go. Put it that way.
Okay. Is Joe going to go?
I haven't asked him yet, but I thought he would be going too.
He's usually a speaker.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Any thoughts on what Steve said?
Which time?
That last time. Don't worry about 2008, but we're monitoring the heck out of that.
I will send
situation.
Something out via email tomorrow. So.
Yeah. Carol?
Yeah, can I just get an answer to the question, why is it totally off the table to pursue some kind of legal or financial accounting kind of accounting standards action, not by ourselves, in conjunction with other counties, maybe.
They write the rules.
I mean, they have constitutionally, they have the right to take our money.
Yeah, and they've done retroactive. I mean, just because they've done it doesn't mean it's right. But I'm just saying. But they've done retroactive.
If you can find a legal handle, good for you.
Yeah, go for it.
We looked for one.
No, there may be. I think. The political side, I mean, this is an election. If NYSEC's meeting in 2 weeks, which is 6 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever before the election. I believe there are options besides taking a hatchet to state government, which is county government. And I don't understand why some of our colleagues are refusing to look at some of the other options besides cut, cut, cut. And I'm getting angry at other people who are not here. I think if we got a cap on Medicaid, on the local share of Medicaid, by being organized and by being forceful. This is actually a perfect time for us to try to make something different happen.
My question doesn't concern upcoming cuts that will
right.
come in the future.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, all right, Carol, we're going to have to move on from there. Norma, you ready?
I'm going to change the subject. I passed out a document a few minutes ago from personnel.
Yes.
They wanted me to make sure everybody knew. They did put it on our secretary's desk, who's been out for 2 days, so I didn't know it was there. So they did submit it to us. I didn't see it, so that's why you can get a copy. You also have a blue folder on your desk that has some additional information that you did request, so just want you to be aware of that. And that's it. Thank you.
Yes.
And so in terms of that, are we doing any... I mean, I think so.
I don't think that we should do anything tonight. I think that this is not the moment to do something.
Okay. Great.
Okay. It's very clear.
Yeah.
we'll take it from
yeah.
there.
Hey, yeah. All right. Yeah. Note to self: do not do this 3 hours into meeting. Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a good night.
Sorry.